Fifth, correct.
The Catholic Channel SiriusXM 129 presents Just Love with your host, Monsignor Kevin Sullivan, Executive Director of Catholic Charities of the Archdiocese of New York.
Welcome to Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. This is our weekly conversation about the church in the world. This is our attempt to look at the world through the lens of Catholic social thought and to see, when we do that, what are the things that we should be focusing on that we need to do to make our world more just and to make it more compassionate? Because part of our Catholic world vision is that even while we're on the way to heaven, that this world should be reflective of the dignity of the human person, and that the things we can do to make our world a better place, and we should do it. And what we always say here on Just Love is, you know, maybe we can't solve all of the global problems, but if we just love God, if we just love ourselves, and we just love our neighbor, well, if a lot of us did that, that would go a long way to making our world more just and making it more compassionate. So if you want, you can check out my blog, justloveblog.com, and on there you'll find things that follow the themes of the show. And you can follow me on Twitter at MSGRKSullivan, and you can find some of the things that we are talking about here on this show. This week we are focusing on some of those things that, you know, inevitably happen, and we kind of get startled when they happen. We know they're going to happen, but when they come, they're a crisis, they're emergency, they're a disaster, and we have to respond to them. And so a little bit later on in the show, we're going to have the controller of New York State, Thomas DiNapoli, with whom I was privileged to kind of accompany to Puerto Rico last week, where we looked at some of the recovery work being done by Caritas, or Catholic Charities of Puerto Rico, and one of the affiliated agencies of Catholic Charities in New York, New York Foundling, that has Head Start centers in about five different communities throughout the island of Puerto Rico. And then a little bit later on in the show, we're going to be speaking with Josh Lockwood, who is the kind of head of the American Red Cross in New York. Josh also does some work for throughout the Northeast. And we're going to be speaking about how the American Red Cross responds to local disasters. And we've worked closely with the Red Cross over the years. And Josh is a friend, and I'm delighted that we're going to be speaking with him. And then I can't wait, because, and listeners will know that in the middle, we're just going to have a quick chat with the Dean of Grace Episcopal Cathedral in San Francisco, California, because their youth ministry is sponsoring a Beyonce Mass. And that took place a little bit earlier this week. And we're going to talk about that with the Reverend Malcolm Clemens Young, who is the Dean of Grace Church. So anyway, so I'm excited about our show today. And Tom, as we're going to be talking a lot about disasters, give us a little update on what Caritas, and for our listeners, Caritas is the name for Catholic Charities in almost every other country in the world besides the United States. We use the term Catholic Charities. The rest of the countries of the world use the Latin form of charity, Caritas, but it's basically the same organization and the same work. So, Tom, tell us what Caritas in Syria is doing.
Sure, Monsignor. Well, as you know, we're going to be talking about disasters. Some of them are natural, some are man-made. And sadly, Caritas Syria responded to the recent missile attack back on April 13th at the United States, Britain, and France, intended to weaken Syria's chemical weapon capabilities. However, what Caritas Syria has said is that this has not hindered the assistance that they provide to the country's poor and internally displaced. In fact, Sandra Awad, who is the communications director for the Catholic Relief Agency there, said, "We have enough pain in our lives. We don't need to have any more." As you mentioned, Monsignor Caritas Syria is the country's branch of Caritas International, the Catholic Church's international network of charitable agencies. Caritas is doing what it can to meet the huge needs of those suffering violence there from the war, which is now in its eighth year and has engulfed the beleaguered country. It provides food and non-food necessities to a large number of displaced throughout the country who lost things due to fighting. In fact, in talking about this, Sandra Awad went on to say, many lost everything, their property, their houses. They're forced to rent tiny apartments in big cities where the rent is very expensive, where she was referring to the rents in Damascus and Aleppo, where some reconstruction has begun. And they're also helping families with destroyed houses in Aleppo to return to their homes and live their lives instead of paying high rent and shelters. She also mentioned that medical assistance is provided to those in Damascus, Aleppo, and homes. But she said that family medical expenses are very high. Sanctions prohibit materials needed to make medicines. Most of the medical or pharmaceutical factories have been destroyed. And all good doctors, or many of them, have emigrated and left the country. Half of the health centers have been destroyed.
Well, Tom, thanks for kind of letting our listeners know about that. It's certainly a very, very depressing scene, and it's interesting. And one of the things we like to kind of make sure our listeners keep in mind, there are always a lot of kind of foreign policy issues. How do you keep the world peaceful? How do you deal with aggression? How do you deal with one country invading another country? And what are all the issues of nuclear controls and who's using which weapons? And those are big issues that need to be confronted. One of the things that a news note like this kind of reminds us is that, you know, whatever the big geopolitical issues are, that oftentimes they have disastrous humanitarian effects, that people oftentimes are forced out of their houses. Many times the basics are disrupted. There's no food supply. There's no power sometimes. And we'll talk a little bit about that with a natural disaster in Puerto Rico and the Caribbean. But when there is the disaster of war and the disaster of revolution and things like that, this also has the impact on people and what's going on in those places. And so, again, I think one of the things that is interesting to realize that pretty much Caritas, Catholic Charities, under a variety of different names, Catholic Relief Services, Catholic Near East Welfare Association. And then there are international countries like the Church in Need, Miserere, which are from particular countries. They are doing an incredible job of just trying to alleviate the suffering that happens when there are these types of disasters, and when there are missile attacks, when there are internal civil wars, that there creates a lot of damage to the reality of what's going on in those situations. So, all right. So, you know, this is Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan, and we say just love God, just love your neighbor, just love yourself. And let's see if we can make our world a little bit more just and make it a little bit more compassionate. If you want to follow me on Twitter, you can do so as MSGRK Sullivan. And you can check out my blog at justloveblog.com. And we talk about some of the same topics that we look at here on our weekly show. And we talk about those things which, you know, we think are important for us to reflect upon as our Catholic social teaching, to see if our world can be more just and how it can be more compassionate. You know, it's not easy to figure out how we do that. And it's important that we do kind of reflect upon how we are kind of trying to make our world a better place. Sometimes just in the ordinary day-to-day life, we have to figure out how we do things a little bit better. And then when disasters come along, we have to figure out how we are going to check out the situation there and how we're going to kind of respond to those humanitarian crises. So I'm delighted that our next guest, the Comptroller of the State of New York, Thomas DiNapoli, who was kind of gracious enough to join us when we kind of went to Puerto Rico last week to look at some of the work that is going on there to help the people on the island to recover from the disastrous hurricane that occurred last fall. Controller DiNapoli, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Monsignor. It's great to be back on your show, and it certainly was a challenging but also inspiring opportunity to see the important recovery work that's going on in Puerto Rico and to see the connection between the Archdiocese in New York and Catholic Charities and Caritas in Puerto Rico and that affirmation of that strong bond that's there. It was great to see it up close.
And Tom, picking that up, and thank you for coming and commenting on that. But I do remember in kind of one of the conversations that you had when you were in Puerto Rico, you did speak about the bond between New York State and Puerto Rico. Say a little bit more about that to our listeners, because, you know, I think maybe for people in other parts of the country and maybe even some people at home, they say, well, you know, what's the controller of New York State doing down in Puerto Rico? Shouldn't he be taking care of the money in New York State? Why is he going to visit Puerto Rico? Say a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, look, there's such a long history. So many of our families in the New York metro area, you know, going back decades, they are families that moved over from Puerto Rico to the U.S., and many of them settled in New York. The Puerto Rican community is a very strong presence, not just in the city of New York, but I live out on Long Island here as well, upstate. You know, it's certainly the connections are very, very personal, and there are so many that we know, and people on my staff, people in my office, who have family that have been living through the devastation since the hurricane, living with the, to say the very least, the inconvenience, not having power, not having access to water, you know, and sending money. We have many families, as you know, Kevin, Monsignor, that have had their relatives come stay with them. Yeah, and they've come to New York, or, you know, obviously we know many families are now settled in the Florida area. So there's been a human dimension, a human connection that you can't avoid. When you're in New York, you know someone who is Puerto Rican, perhaps living here, definitely still has family back there. So the ties are familial. They're economic as well. Many New Yorkers regularly visit Puerto Rico. So just the connections are very deep. They're very personal. And we very much view the community of Puerto Rico as being our neighbors in a very direct way. So when they're hurt, you know, we feel that hurt, and we feel certainly a need to respond.
And I think, and I saw this myself, that the very brief time we spent there, but it was very important that the controller of New York State went there. For our listeners throughout the country, in New York State, there are only three offices in New York State that are really that are elected by all the people of New York State, and the controller is one of those offices. So his presence there is certainly a sign of solidarity by all the people of New York State with the ongoing situation, which is very, very difficult in the island.
And as you know, Monsignor, in addition to the great work that nonprofits like Catholic Charities has been doing, you know, the governor, senators, assembly members, city council members, I mean, the response, the donations, the visits to Puerto Rico really has been across the board, and hopefully it has made an impact and made a difference.
You know, I do think it's I mean, Puerto Rico, one, it's not a state, and secondly, it's not physically connected to the mainland of the United States, and so for whatever other reasons there might be going on, there's a little bit of could be out of sight, out of mind, because it is different than some of the other areas when they're hit by disasters. So, you know, for New York to kind of make sure that the rest of the country doesn't forget about this part of the United States, these citizens of the United States, is a pretty, I think, important kind of responsibility that we have to do that.
Well, you touched on something very, very key. These are fellow citizens. These are U.S. citizens. They're Americans. They have that strange status as a commonwealth, but that doesn't in any way diminish the fact that they are part of the American family. And yet, because of that strange government structure, and look, we're all aware, there have been problems there in terms of some of their government issues, certainly in terms of the finances of the island before the hurricane. You know, you have that federal oversight board now. It's certainly a complicated situation made worse by the hurricane. And that's why the human response, that you're certainly a part of, the utility workers that were sent from New York and from other states to go down there and help, even the response from the business community as well. We don't want these neighbors of ours, these fellow U.S. citizens, to feel left out. I mean, we know what it's like in New York, right? When there's an outage, for a couple of days, people go crazy, right? When there's the bad weather, you've had folks down there that have been out for months.
Hey, Tom, you're from Long Island. You may take a couple of days. In New York City, 3 minutes, and we're upset by that.
Yeah, you put that in context. And of course, when we were down there, one of the things that struck me, and I think I commented on this to you when we were there, and we were recognizing we were in San Juan and the San Juan suburbs, so much more was back online than I was anticipating. I'm sure had we spent time, if we had more time to go out into the mountains and the countryside, that's where you'd still see the real impact of the devastation and the real human toll that still is a very, very harmful one. But even in the areas where we were, where the electricity was back on, although they had the power outage right before we got there, it was pointed out to us to look at, when we're on the plane, to look at all the blue tarps, and there's still many homes and buildings where the roofs still have not been replaced. So even in the areas where they seem to have come back, there's still work that has to be done.
You did mention, we're speaking with Thomas DiNapoli, the controller of the state of New York, who just traveled last week to show solidarity with our neighbors in Puerto Rico, many of whom have family members in New York State and other parts of the United States also. Tom, you began to mention a little bit something that maybe surprised you a little bit. Was there anything else that you kind of learned during that trip that you maybe said, I hadn't thought about that, or that's a little different than some other disasters? Anything that kind of struck you?
Yeah, I mean, one of the issues, and we heard it from a couple of the folks we met with, was the mental health dimension of all of this. And we tend to think about the physical impact in terms of a building being destroyed or not being, without power. But even though the recovery may be proceeding on a physical sense, many people emotionally, mentally, spiritually still are feeling they're hurt, they're anxious. I think your colleague Talia said that there's someone she knows that just when it starts to rain, she gets terrible anxiety. And I think Jaime, who we were with at lunch, was talking about it's really a version of post-traumatic stress syndrome that many people are going through. The level of loss of spirit is there, which still, many times, we saw the little kids, in that community just outside of San Juan, and they were beautiful and gorgeous and full of spirit. I mean, the advantage of youth, sometimes they don't know full dimensions of what's going on around them. But for the adults, there's still a struggle. Think of all those who have, they may be on the island, but half their family may have, moved to be living in Orlando or in New York City for a period of time. A lot of anxiety about the economy. The tourism is starting to come back. We saw more of that than I expected to see in San Juan, but it's not back to where it was. Some of the big hotels, they still have to be reconstructed. So anxiety about the future, anxiety about something I didn't think of, Monsignor, they're heading into hurricane season again.
Yeah. That was something that got me, and again, you just recounted this, but the woman who, whenever she hears rain's coming or rain does come, she kind of becomes paralyzed because is this another hurricane that's there?
Yeah. So the need for the kind of help that charities and Caritas, the other groups, are doing, tending to the physical need. And safety, very important. But that emotional dimension, the importance of getting the social services network back up, you know, the child care programs that we visited, but also the support for adults, I mean, that is just as important. And I guess before I went there, I was expecting really more to focus on the physical well-being, and I hadn't fully appreciated the fact that there is a mental health component here that that still needs to be addressed, and probably that's going to be a concern moving forward for a very long time.
So, Tom, let me shift our conversation a little bit, because I've become maybe a little bit more focused on this, and we were fortunate to be able to meet with what might be something of your counterpart for the Commonwealth of Puerto Rico, the controller of Puerto Rico. And as part of that conversation, we at least began to get into what I think Father Henrique of Caritas referred to as the big hurricane coming of the economy being so devastated. Say a little bit about that, and any new insights or insights that you may have had that you can share with our listeners about that long-term need.
They have so many issues going on there, and issues that predated the impact of the hurricane. And certainly the controller, and she's very spirited, their office, like my office, it's about transparency and accountability. And obviously just the internals there in Puerto Rico, between, you know, the governor, and then you have the different municipalities. There's clearly a lot of inefficiency. I hate to use the word, but I will. There's been a history of corruption as well that's really held the island back. There tends to be a lot of shifts in the politics, and, you know, you have the party that's in favor of statehood versus the party in favor of Commonwealth, the smaller group for independence, and the tremendous shifts, a big reliance on the public sector for employment. And since Puerto Rico is heavily indebted, and their finances are a mess, people being threatened with layoff, pensions perhaps being threatened, it's just a cascading a level of challenges which clearly the island can't manage on its own. You now have this federal oversight board, which, you know, certainly from what I've heard from people who are following this here in the U.S., and I think we got a sense of it there as well, there's no confidence that oversight board is doing anything that is helpful at this point. In fact, there's a view that it's being very punitive in some of its approach. I sense the federal administration here in this country isn't really paying attention to what's going on there. You've got issues of people, because of all of this, and perhaps then losing their job because of the hurricane. Let's say you worked in the tourism industry and the restaurant is closed or the hotel doesn't hire you anymore. Foreclosure issues are becoming a real concern. We've written to, through our pension fund, we're invested in some of the funds that invest in some of the financial institutions that hold mortgages, and we have urged those to provide relief. Do not go the foreclosure route. Give people a chance to get back on their feet. The U.S. government also, through HUD and their mortgage powers, need to extend the opportunity. So there's just a very tangled set of circumstances that just so further complicate, you know, the issue there. And they've got their hands full, and you don't get a sense that on the ground there's as much cooperation locally, and certainly in that they're getting the kind of support they need, you know, from the U.S. side, from a governmental and from a finance point of view, which is, again, why we all need to be involved and do whatever part we can play to try to make sure the human impact at a very, very personal level can be minimized in terms of the negative impact that people are going through.
Controller Thomas DiNapoli, the controller of the state of New York, just paid a visit of solidarity and concern to the island of Puerto Rico to express on behalf of all of New York State that they are our neighbors, they're our fellow citizens, and that we need to stand with them in this moment of great trial and long term for a moment of, not for a moment, but for a time of recovery. Tom, thanks so much for taking the time to be with us on Just Love today, and best to you.
Thanks, Monsignor.
Okay. Let's take a break. This is the Catholic Channel. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. When we come back, we're going to be talking with the Dean of Grace Cathedral in San Francisco. We're going to be speaking about the Beyonce Mass that they are sponsoring there. Just do it. Love God, your neighbor, yourself, and our world will be more just and more compassionate. We'll be back on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. Welcome back to Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. Our weekly conversation about what's going on in the world through the prism of our Catholic vision of justice and compassion. Love God, love your neighbor, love yourself. Our world will be more just and it will be more compassionate. Well, I am delighted that right now, the very Reverend Malcolm Clemens Young, the Dean of Grace Cathedral in San Francisco, is taking time out of what is an incredibly busy and exciting day to be with us on Just Love. Reverend Young, thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. I'm delighted to be here.
Well, I got to tell you, I am a huge Beyonce fan. So when you...
told me that.
Yeah, so I am just absolutely delighted. But tell us, I mean, a Beyonce Mass, what's this all about? Whose idea? Your idea? Great idea.
Oh, thanks. No great idea that happens at Grace Cathedral is my idea. It's a big team that's at work on everything.
Oh, that's nice and collegial, but come on, take credit for it.
No, I really, really can't take credit.
If it goes wrong, you're going to get the blame, though.
I'm going to get the blame. I take responsibility, but I can't take the praise. We live in a city that's just tremendously secular. It's just hard to describe how it feels relative to other places in America. And so we felt really strongly about wanting to reach out to people who just don't even know anything about church at all. So we started a department of innovative ministries a couple of years ago. And that department of the cathedral was working with basically a seminarian, an intern, who had been in a seminary with a professor named Yolanda Norton, who taught a class called Beyonce and the Hebrew Bible. So they had done a lot of kind of Beyonce work really under the radar in their seminary. And when he came on staff here at Grace Cathedral, we brought the idea together here. So we've had a few other services that were like this. He first found out about us through a sister act mass that we had last summer. And then we have a bluegrass mass that happens in the fall too, which is, we have a very big bluegrass concert in the main park in the city. And
so let me, I basically know the structure of the liturgy. So are you actually using Beyonce songs for the music for the Mass?
So there will be Beyonce songs gathering as people gather, and there will be songs in the service too.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a pretty amazing thing.
It's not a mortal sin if you answer this question wrong, but are you a Beyonce fan?
I am. I have children. My wife is a woman of color. And so our children and my wife are the ones who connect me to popular culture. So you know, when the Lemonade video came out, they're like, "You've got to see this, Dad." And I've been following her for a while.
I mean, I do love her music. I think there is such a message of empowerment and female empowerment in there too. I think there is a real sense of responsibility. So I think there are incredible themes that are there. Probably, I'm not quite sure I could figure out how to work partition into the liturgy, but you know, you don't have to get 100% of it. So but I will tell you that I guess it was last year or something, I was invited to preach at an interfaith service, and it was within a few weeks after Formation came out. And I basically preached on Formation as a few of the themes that were in there. So it's good. Good to
it is, and you know, so many of her love songs. I mean, you know, if you love our Lord, I mean, you see how meaningful they are for a person of faith. You know, so you know, everybody interprets music in their own way.
Right.
But if you're a person of faith and you're listening to some of this, you hear different things, I think, than you might if that's not your reference.
Well, and again, I think why it's a. I mean, you can do whatever you want with art and culture and interpretation, but it seems to me that a spiritual interpretation of some of her music is absolutely appropriate, given her own upbringing, given her own background, that I don't think it's too much to read too much into it.
Right, right. Well, I even just think, just as a mother of children, I mean, there is a way in which just having children just opens your eyes, and it's such a spiritual experience itself. And so even just as her career and her life develops, I mean, we're just seeing more and more things. And as those children grow up, we'll see a new Beyonce, I think.
Yeah, and it's interesting. You find some things as you're going through it. I didn't realize till I listened through it all the way. The song we came back with, Heaven, is she prays the Lord's Prayer in Spanish at the end of that song. Who would have thunk it?
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
Exactly. This is this is so important to her sense of self and her sense of what she's doing in the world.
Okay. So I have to ask you, as the dean of the cathedral, are you actually the celebrant of the service tonight?
You know, I am the last person that you should get up in front of a crowd of young, hip people. We're so lucky. We have people on our staff who are people of color. We have people who are younger, and really, they're going to be the ones who are, you know, up in front, at the forefront. I mentioned Yolanda Norton, the San Francisco Theological Seminary professor. She's going to be the preacher. So it's better this way.
Good. So, but are you going to show up at least?
Oh, for sure. And,
oh,
and,
good.
You know, I'm so lucky. I'll make an announcement or welcome people there.
That's great.
The last thing you need is the old white guys coming back.
Well,
I'm gonna tell everybody what my interpretation of Beyonce is.
As I tell everybody, I'm old and decrepit. So, I mean, I don't have much to say about anything. But, hey, let me just say thank you to you for taking the chance and doing this in kind of, you know, whatever image we want to use, reaching out into the deep or kind of throwing the net wide. Thanks so much for trying to make our gospel message in the season of the resurrection more available to more people. So, Dean Young, thanks so much for doing that, and thanks for taking the time to be with us on Just Love.
Yeah, and thanks for your ministry, too. I'm very grateful for this conversation.
Great. Thanks so much. Dean, the very Reverend Malcolm Clemens Young, the 9th Dean of Grace Cathedral, which is sponsoring a Beyonce Mass to kind of try to reach out to some of those people who who are not so connected with our Christian religious themes, and to open them up to that theme. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to be speaking with Josh Lockwood, the head of the Red Cross in New York. This is Just Love. Just love God, just love your neighbor, just love yourself, and our world will be more just, and it will be more compassionate. Join us when we come back on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.
Almighty, we forward in this generation.
Welcome back to Just Love. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. Our weekly conversation about the church in the world, and what we do is we look at what's going on in the world through our perspective of Catholic social teaching. And that's why we say just love. Just love God, just love your neighbor, just love yourself, and our world will be more just and more compassionate. This week, we're kind of taking a focus on some of those things that when the world really gets out of order in a really quick way. Earlier in the show, we spoke with Comptroller Tom DiNapoli of New York State about his recent visit to the island of Puerto Rico and to look at the recovery efforts and to express solidarity with the people who are there, which is kind of a global issue. And I'm delighted that we have here in the studio today Josh Lockwood, who is the CEO of the American Red Cross in the greater New York area. And we're going to speak about how the Red Cross kind of focuses on local disasters. Sometimes they're big, sometimes they're really small, and their role, and also some of the things that they do to kind of maybe prevent disasters. We might not think that the Red Cross cares about preventing disasters, but they do a whole lot in terms of trying to prevent them and to prepare people when kind of inevitably a disaster does strike in one place or the other. Josh, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me. I'm thrilled to be here.
Great. So everybody kind of knows the Red Cross, and you know, some charities even get a little jealous because of the publicity that the Red Cross does. But give our listeners just a little thumbnail of what is the mission of the Red Cross?
Yeah, on a very basic level, our mission at the Red Cross is to alleviate suffering and save lives. And we do that in a few different ways.
We kind of say that's Jesus' job, too.
We join him in that struggle.
Okay, great.
We respond to disasters large and small. We respond to 60,000 disasters a year across the United States. We respond not just nationally, but internationally. We also collect 40% of the nation's blood. One blood donation can save three lives. So there's a constant need for that generous form of donation. And then we teach life-saving classes like CPR and first aid that help everyday Americans save lives at a moment's notice.
So you have one of those kind of fire safety things coming up that you're doing. And again, just for our listeners, you know, we're in the New York area, so there probably are similar things in your area, but we're going to talk about something going on in the New York area, Jeff.
Actually, we have this right now, a national campaign going on called Sound the Alarm. And what it is, it's a program where our Red Cross volunteers, which is over 90% of our workforce, go into homes in vulnerable communities and install free smoke alarms. And while they're installing the alarms, another volunteer sits with the household, sits with the family, and talks about what's your evacuation route if you have a fire? Do you have a go bag in your home if you have to leave at a moment's notice? And go through some basic fire safety tips. And so it's a great program. Unbelievably, across America, seven Americans die every day in home fires. And surprisingly, the New York City area has more fires than anywhere else in the country. So we have local teams in the greater New York area who up to 10 to 15 times a day are rushing out at a moment's notice, meeting New Yorkers who've just run for their lives and lost everything, and really helping them get back on their feet and put their lives back together. And that work, again, is done by the best this country has to offer, big-hearted volunteers who are trained to do this work.
So, Josh, let's do a little bit of kind of education of me, the host, and our listeners, because I have a confession, okay? I don't have a go bag.
Yeah.
So tell me what I should do, and why should I have a go bag, and tell me what's in it.
Yeah, so a great question. Everybody should have a go bag. You should actually have one in your home,
I don't have
in your
one.
Car.
I will commit, if I understand what you're telling us here, I will commit to getting a go bag within the next month. How about that?
That's good. And I have connections. I might be able to get you
one. Oh, okay.
So, and I have to say that my 8-year-old son occasionally rifles through my go bag. I should probably look at mine as well. There's a few basic things you want. You want to have non-perishable food. You want to have water. You want to have sanitary items. You want to have an envelope full of a little bit of cash if you need that at a moment's notice, if ATMs aren't working during a disaster. And you want to have copies of key documents that you might need if you lose everything in your home. So just throwing those things together in a bag. We have a list of all the items at redcross.org, so you could check that. But again, if there's a hurricane, for example, no one thinks anything terrible is going to happen to them. But in many instances, you only have 2 minutes to get out of your home in a disaster.
Wow. And what? Just so our listeners know, I know you got a list, but what would be some of the basic documents that you recommend that people put in their go bag?
Yeah, it's always great to have a copy of your driver's license, any insurance documents you have, any birth certificate that you might need to show, property documents, testifying to ownership of a property. All of those documents are generally needed. When you're trying to put your life back together a couple days later and you're having to meet with insurance companies or meet with disaster officials.
Okay. So, Josh, I was speaking with Josh Lockwood, who is the CEO of the American Red Cross of Greater New York. And Josh has been, you've been with the Red Cross for a couple of decades, haven't you?
Actually, I've been with the Red Cross about 7 years, but I was at Habitat for Humanity before that.
Okay.
So it's a virtuous circle,
right.
I hope.
Okay. So, Josh, I think we usually think about the fires.
Yeah.
That like the Red Cross shows up and fires and they do things there. But there are other kinds of disasters, like that horrible shooting in Las Vegas. The Red Cross was involved in that. That doesn't strike me as part of the the mission, but I guess it is.
Yeah, it is. And unfortunately, has become more and more part of the mission as these terrible shootings have taken place across the country. And the way the Red Cross is able to do our work, for example, in this crazy year when we've had a succession of hurricanes and California wildfires and mass shootings, is we take our volunteers and staff from around the country and deploy them for weeks to go to those areas. But I've personally deployed both for the Pulse nightclub shooting and the Las Vegas shooting this year. And, you know, I often tell people the Red Cross mission is one that absolutely is shattering and can break your heart. But you also see the best this country has to offer. I mean, when I was in Las Vegas, we had, for example, mental health professionals who dropped everything, raced to that scene, stood by families as they were waiting to get death notices in a what we call a family assistance center, and stayed with those families as long as they were needed. It's just the hardest kind of work. Standing alongside people who are experiencing that kind of shock and grief. So it's really heartening that this country has to offer those kinds of heroes who quietly behind the scenes do that work. The Red Cross doesn't really promote or fundraise at all for these events. We don't want to appear in any way that we're somehow benefiting from these mass shootings and these sufferings. But we deploy there and do the best we can.
So you said 90% of the Red Cross's work is done by volunteers.
Yeah.
That must be quite a challenge managing that cohort of volunteers.
Yeah, even in the greater New York region, we have between 6,000 and 7,000 volunteers, and none of them have to do what I tell them. So that's the great thing about volunteers is, you know, they're donating their time, the time that they have to give to this great mission. But it's not like our regular employee base. And some folks have, you know, an hour a year to give. Some have 50 hours a week to give. So managing that cohort is really, it's not as much a challenge in that if you're managing the expectations up front. We built out a table of organization that includes volunteers and we treat them as part of our workforce. But yeah, you know, they don't have the same kind of contractual obligation to our mission that a regular employee might.
And I guess part of the challenge is that the lives of volunteers change and they may be gung-ho and they want to volunteer and then maybe they move someplace else or something happens and their life condition changes.
Exactly. You know, of our 7,000 volunteers we have in Greater New York, 2,500 are 18 or younger. 2,500 are 18 or younger. Okay. So that's a perfect example of a population that often leaves the area and we try and hold on to for the Red Cross. But, you know, that can be really challenging for us. But then we have folks, I have a volunteer partner, which is what we call the one person who can step into your role or stand alongside you, a wonderful retired school teacher named Arturo Guzman. He's been volunteering with the Red Cross for 36 years. So we also have these folks who are stalwart supporters that we rely on day in, day out.
I assume you can always are looking to refresh and to recruit new volunteers.
Yeah, it's a big part of my job is recruiting, retaining, celebrating that volunteer workforce. I mean, I think there's 25,000 not-for-profits in New York City, so there's a lot of choices for people. So trying to provide the best-in-class experience for our volunteers is important.
So if a listener wanted to learn more and possibly volunteer, I assume they could do so on your website?
100%. You can go to redcross.org, put in your zip code, and then we have a list of job descriptions for volunteer opportunities, and people can scan through and see what's interesting to them.
And I would assume, given what you said, that some of the responses in Las Vegas, you really can use both people who can kind of just roll up their sleeves and do whatever needs to be done, but you also can use people with a certain maybe credentials or professional skills that you can use in specialized situations.
Yeah, I'll give an example. We have a group of FDNY firefighters that volunteers with us. Both Spanish-speaking and non-Spanish-speaking, and they bring special skills and are invaluable to the Red Cross, whether we're responding to Hurricane Harvey in Texas or in the U.S. Virgin Islands or in Puerto Rico, both with language skills and also being able to stomach really tough conditions on the ground, sleeping outside, tough stuff. But we love for people to get trained and background checked before the big disaster hits. So if there are folks out there who want to deploy to one of these big events, it's really tough in the moment for us to do that for you. But if you get trained first, we'll get you set.
That's good. Josh, thank you so much. Is there any final thing you'd like to leave our listeners with?
Well, you know, I'll just say that Catholic Charities is an incredible partner to us in a lot of our work. We couldn't do it without your team's help. And also the great folks at FDNY and the FDNY Foundation who support our Home Fire campaign are just wonderful partners.
Well, you know, let me just follow up with that, Josh. Thank you. And I would say the same. And again, for the sake of our listeners, you know, one of the real values of the Red Cross is they're there within minutes out of when a disaster strikes. And they want to make sure that the families, the individuals get the help that's needed right on the spot, which is so critical when an emergency, a fire, a disaster falls. Catholic Charities, on the other hand, we kind of see our mission as being there for the 3 or 5 years that sometimes it takes for a family, a community to recover. Boy, we're delighted that the Red Cross is there. And what we're working together with Red Cross is for the sake of those who are impacted, that when you transition from that immediate, it's kind of as seamless as possible so that they don't have to go through a whole new other system. And so Catholic Charities is proud to be working with the Red Cross on trying to develop that little bit of a seamless handoff for those who have suffered the trauma.
100%.
Yeah. Josh Lockwood, CEO of Red Cross of Greater New York, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Okay. So, you know, we wish that we could predict the world. We wish that things went along normally. And even when they go along normally, people need help. Things aren't right. But then comes these huge disasters. And thank God there are organizations like the Red Cross that are there. And we were just in Puerto Rico. Thank God for Caritas in Puerto Rico. And the thing about what I think is so valuable about organizations like the Red Cross and Catholic Charities is we don't have to go to a community because we're already in the community. It's not like you're bringing in some people from outside of the community, but these communities are rooted there. Now, yes, when there's a disaster, we mobilize people because we need extra resources, and thank God that volunteers and even staff can be deployed from where they usually are to other places. But there's a core that is already there, and that means that you know the relationships, you know the resources, you know some of the sensitivities of a community, and that is absolutely critical for that to happen. So I am, we gotta prepare. I did make a commitment. I will get my go bag within the next month, and I'll have the documents and all of those things that are there. And you know, I encourage you. There's a lot of ways to volunteer. You can go to the Red Cross website. You can go to the Catholic Charities website. But the need to kind of reach out in solidarity to a neighbor who is suffering is very, very good. The one little caution I say to our listeners, check out the websites, see what's really needed. Because sometimes if we're not that familiar, we think the need is this. But let's make sure we're really helping our neighbor when we want to be generous. Thanks for being with us. I'm Monsignor Kevin Sullivan. Follow me on Twitter, MSGRKSullivan. JustLoveBlog.com also. Thanks for being with us. The Catholic Channel, SiriusXM 129.
Listening to the Catholic Channel, SiriusXM 129.